Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the airwaves at the Breaking It Down podcast, hosted by yours truly, Mark Mancini, live in Los Angeles, 347-205-9631. Goes by quick. Catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So as I lay the red carpet down, I put that podium in its place, hand off the mic. First of all, the guest today, I'll tell you, he's a brother, a mentor, a friend, Mike Lavallee, played 12 seasons in the big leagues. First of all, Mike, how are you?
Well, doing good, Mark. I live here in Florida now, and it's an absolute beautiful place, but we get a little storm coming our way, but it shouldn't be too much, just a rain event. But just in case, I already did my shopping.
There you go, my friend. And let everybody know how they can get a hold of you, whether it's social media or any way.
Well, I've got my Facebook is Mike Lavallee. On Twitter, I'm at Spanky Catches. And the rest of it, you can't get in touch with me. Too bad. Sorry.
Let's talk about the nickname, because the nickname is great. I love that, they nicknamed you Spanky. And who gave you the nickname, and how did that come about?
Well, I've had a few nicknames in my days when I was in college. My nickname was Weevils, and it was because I would wobble, but I wouldn't fall down. I was also called Bulldog for a little bit whenever I was with the Phillies, but 1985, playing in AAA for the Cardinals, Jim Fregosi was our manager, and he said, Spanky. And I didn't pay any attention to it because, if you fight it, it's definitely going to stick. But regardless of any intentions, that's what I'm known as, and that's kind of my nickname. That it is what it is, and actually, I'm flattered that I have one that stuck.
Right, you broke in with the Phillies there, 1984. Take us through that, because boy, that Philly team was pretty darn good in the heyday there. What was it like to play in Philadelphia?
Well, let's just say I'll give you a little example. I first got called up in September. A September call up, when you call up a catcher, a young catcher, more times than not, you're going to be spend most of your time in the bullpen warming guys up. And before my first game, I'm warming up Shane Raleigh. And they just opened up the gates. He had a little sideline. And one of the fans yells down, "Hey, Lavallee." That's the Philadelphia accent for Lavallee. And here I am. It's like, wow, this is impressive. I've, my first game, here in Philadelphia, and they already know my name. But shortly after, "Hey, Lavallee, is your stinking bullpen catcher. You suck." And at that point, I was a little worried about it. And Irish Mike Ryan was our bullpen coach. And I look at him, I go, "Hey, Irish, what's up with that?" He goes, "Oh, no, if they know your name, they love you. Don't pay attention to whatever they say." So let's just say that Philly fans are perhaps the most passionate. Let's just not say friendly or unfriendly. They are certainly passionate.
Yeah, and when you look at it, I know you've been on the Philadelphia WWDB show, Liberty Bell Smack, with Marianne Sal and myself, and yeah, it could be a little brash there with those guys too. But when you look at the passion and everything, and sometimes it helps to be a hometown member of that team more so than a visitor, because I can imagine coming in as a visitor, it's a whole different realm of things. Any thought to that?
Well, and again, I think Philadelphia fans are, obviously they're wanting their teams to win. But if you're given an honest effort, they're really, they're going to give you every chance. And, that's ultimately, as a fan that comes and, gets a ticket, they want your best effort night in, night out. I think they were you know, pretty unfair at times to a guy like Mike Schmidt. You know, he'd come in and hit two home runs the next time out, next time up, strike out, and they'd boo him. You know, so, I mean, it was something that was tough, but at the same token, you know, whenever you put forth the effort, I'm sure it was appreciated.
And then you go to a city, you sign as a free agent in St. Louis, and I always think, when you think of St. Louis, baseball is right up there with the Bible. It's a religion. Take us through the time in St. Louis. You went to the World Series, too, in 85. Boy, that must have been something. I've never been there, but, boy, you talk about a passionate fan base, a sea of red. What was it like to play in St. Louis for a couple seasons?
Well, Mark, one of my fondest memories was opening night in 1985. I'm the starting catcher, and they line us all up, all the players and coaches, outside the fence down the right field, right center field gap. And they open up the gate, and every one of us has a driver like in a parade with a brand new red Camaro, and we're sitting on the back. It's got our name out there, and place is going absolutely berserk. It's, you know, 55,000 people, and you know, of course, you know, being a young kid, you know, excited, thrilled to death. I mean, it just absolutely blew my mind. So, you know, we finally get announced once we get to home plate. And run out to the line, go through the anthem, you go back in your dugout. And I am on cloud nine right now, which, I mean, just so jacked to play this game. And I'm ready to get out of the dugout when they announce us. Well, Bob Forsch grabs me and says, just hold on a second. And I'm like, come on now, I'm ready to go. I mean, come on, let me go. And he goes, just walk. And so Ozzy runs out, does his triple back handspring, and the place goes absolutely berserk. And my feet didn't touch the ground from the dugout to home plate. I mean, it was just one of the most surreal feelings. I still, get tingles all over my body whenever I think about, you know, how that felt.
And not only that, they come from all over on the weekends. I mean, who knows where they all come from, but that Midwest feeling is going to be something. You see it in Philadelphia where you came from the Phillies, and then go to St. Louis. I mean, and just to see that tradition, and then the World Series, I mean, that's you're right. It's got to be cloud nine.
Well, the amazing thing is, you know, KMOX was really the kind of the only game in town, and it had a huge area where they were able to reach. And that's where you've got so many Cardinal fans throughout Arkansas and Missouri and all over because, you know, they were able to get the Cardinal games on KMOX. So I think that was one of the biggest things. You'd have people come from Cape Girardeau, from Lake of the Ozarks, from all over, and it was an event. And what a tremendous atmosphere and just one of the most, I want to say, intellectual fan bases that appreciated baseball.
Yeah, and then in spring training of 87, you get traded alongside Andy Van Slyke and Mike Dunn to Pittsburgh for Tony Pena coming the other way. But how tough is it to get traded? You know, I know baseball season, you always try to say, okay, if you're going to get traded, you know, let me do this during the off season so I can get acclimated to a city. It doesn't always work that way. You were traded in spring training. How tough was it to get acclimated to Pittsburgh right after that? And what's it like? And share it with the listeners, because a lot of people might not think this. You got to pick up, you got to leave something, you got to leave the family, you got to go there in another city, try to find yourself around. What's it like getting traded in baseball?
Well, actually was traded April Fool's Day, and that left about 3 days before you break camp. And in fact, I don't even know if it was three full days. I already had a place to stay in St. Louis, already put deposits down. You know, I had to try to, you know, get that back. I mean, there was basically no cell phone use at that time. I mean, it was pretty chaotic, you know, very, very difficult. On on the family. I had a one-year-old at the time. Fortunate enough that my roommate with the Cardinals on the road, Tom Lawless, lived outside of Pittsburgh. So we ended up being able to stay at his house and, for that first season. And, I think I was fortunate, very fortunate that, special circumstance allowed itself, because when you go into a brand new city, they give you, 5 days, 6 days at a hotel. And after that, you're paying it on your own dime.
Wow.
And so it's a matter of trying to find an apartment or a house or something. And at that time, minimum salary in the big leagues was $36,000 or $40,000. So, I mean, it wasn't like, things are now. It was very difficult. I didn't know really anybody on the Pittsburgh team. So it wasn't like I had a close friend that could say, hey, Spank, there's a place where we all live. So, you just try to push through it, do the best you can, try to leave the off the field stuff alone so it doesn't affect your game. But there's a lot of pressure, on moving, especially a one-year-old, being able to, find, a place to live.
Yeah, and how much did it help to go with two other teammates, Andy Van Slyke and Mike Dunn there? I mean, what was it like for all three of you? You're trying to find a place, they're trying to find a place. Did it make it easier when a couple other teammates are coming with you compared to if you had to do it by yourself?
Well, not really. The field, yes. I believe Mike Dunn started the year in AAA. So it was Andy and myself. Andy had his own family at the time. So, he's trying to scramble and do the same thing that we're doing. So, it was something that there was a friendly face once you get to the ballpark. But off the field, you're on your own.
Right. And then you and him became stalwarts on the hugely successful Pirate teams of the early 90s. And we didn't really see the Pirates do anything after that, after the years there with you guys, till they hit in 2015. But, boy, I'll tell you, when you looked at all three of those years there, losing to the Reds, the eventual champions, the Braves, and then that, famous play at the plate where I think he was out. And I thought to myself, oh, my God, I was on the floor for about 20 minutes because I thought you guys were definitely going to play Toronto in the World Series. But take us through that big red machine in the 90s, man. That was a squad, because you guys were built for the World Series those 3 years.
Well, the one thing that the Reds had is, they had that bullpen. And basically, it was a six-inning game. If you had the lead after six, you had a chance to win. If you didn't have the lead after six, then they'd close the game out with Dibble and Randy Myers and Norm Charlton. So, you had those three guys, were absolutely fabulous. And, that was the thing is, we came close. I mean, it was a six-game series. It could have gone either way, but, it was almost like the Reds were, a team of destiny, because they absolutely decimated, a really awesome Oakland A's team with a sweep. The Reds, we thought, at all times we were going to win, but, the Reds just a little bit stronger, especially at the end of ball games.
Right. And then the Braves with Glavine and Maddux and all those guys, but you had some horses too, Smiley and Drabek. And when you look at that series, I mean, especially going back, having the 3-2 lead and going to Atlanta and the tomahawk chop, what was the setting there? Because that had to be unbelievable, because you thought, oh, my gosh, we're going to get here, finish these guys off, and get to Toronto. Take us through that grueling series with the Braves.
Well, both the 91 and 92 series were outstanding. In 91, we had a 3-2 lead, and we had both games last two games in Pittsburgh. And they throw, Avery and Schmaltz against you. You know, having, Glavin, Maddox, Avery and Schmaltz, that's four pretty good guys. And, ultimately, they say pitching wins championships. Their starters were too good. We didn't hit enough. We didn't get enough big hits. They just absolutely shut us down those last two games. 92, I mean, it's a flip of the coin. Both teams, we knew each other, a lot of respect for each other. Again, the starting pitching, was outstanding on both sides. It comes down to one play, but, there were a number of different situations, during that series that could have changed. It didn't have to come down to the one play at the plate, but it ended up doing that. And, yes, he was out. I was there. I was the closest one besides Sid. I've asked a couple of my ESPN buddies to review it, and they didn't have enough angles. So it was actually inconclusive. But, as far as I'm concerned, he was out, but the umpire said safe, and that's just the way it is.
Yeah, and then, you survived the loss of Bobby Bonilla going to the Mets. And, next year you lose Bonds and Dre Beck. You move on to the White Sox. The 3 years there, when you looked at the Pirates, what did you take away from that? Jimmy Leland, great manager and everything, seemed like, he's a player's manager. Just frustrating that we didn't get the World Series there in Pittsburgh. But how was your time in Pittsburgh with the guys?
Well, spent 6 years there, and, by far, just that was a great 6 years. Jim Leland was probably the best player's manager. I was fortunate. I played for Whitey Herzog. Whitey was awesome in St. Louis, playing for Jimmy for 6 years. I think the best thing about Jimmy is, you felt that if there was a move to be made that's going to help you win, Jimmy was going to be the guy that's going to be able to make that move. And what was so impressive about it is, he made the number 25 guy feel as important as the number one guy. And every time he put you in there, he put you in there in a situation for you to succeed. It was going to help the team win, but, that was as a player. He got you in the right matchups. He was brilliant with the bullpen, and as a position player, there was never any doubt that Jim Leland was going to pull the right strings, or he's going to push the right buttons and give you the best chance to win.
Well, and not only that, I remember I guess it was the spring training when he stood up to Barry Bonds, and basically made him accountable, saying, nobody's bigger than the team here. The communication with the players, very genuine. I had a chance to interview him quite a few times, and he just struck me as a guy that really cared. I always remember my dad always telling me, nobody cares what you know till they know how much you care. And that word care played a big part in Pittsburgh with Jimmy Leland. Any final thoughts of that?
Well, as a player, you appreciate the leadership. There's pressure, that we put on ourselves. There's pressure that comes from, winning ball games, but having a, captain that knows if you get close to the rocks, he's going to steer clear and he's going to help you, be able to be successful. And, we had a very talented team, with an incredibly talented guy that was captain of that Bucco ship.
Yeah, and then in 1993, you moved on from Pittsburgh, signed a contract with the White Sox. They won the American League West division title, but lost in the American League Championship to the eventual World Series Toronto Blue Jays. How was the years in Chicago?
I had an absolutely fabulous time. Playing in Chicago is a special thing. I love the city. It was one of my favorite things is to go into Wrigley, but you know, the South Side, you know, definitely, you know, had some great fans. We had a tremendous team in 93, you know, just got beat by, you know, a very talented Blue Jay team. 94, I think that was the best chance for us to win. Unfortunately, we, you know, the strike came about in the 94 World Series was blown up. 95 came the emergence of the Indians. So, I mean, we had three great years there, tremendously talented teams. You have the you know, Big Hurt, you're your number three hitter. You have Ventura, Ozzie Guillen, Tim Raines. I mean, Jack McDowell, Alex Fernandez. I mean, you're talking about, you know, a load of talent, big closer, Roberto Hernandez. You know, this team, that team there was, I think it equaled Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh might have been a little better defensively, but offensively, as good as we were in Pittsburgh, I think the White Sox team might have been an even a little better.
Wow. And, you know, I've never been to Chicago, but the saying goes, great people, great restaurants, bad weather. Is that a saying you saw?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I get to April. Was no fun most of the days. It was as cold and raw as you ever want to spend, you know, playing a baseball game. If there was a way of getting a snowsuit underneath a uniform, I think we all would have done it.
You know, how has the game changed today? I look at it and I go, and I know we talked about it before with the show today, but it's kind of hard to watch in more ways than one. And the reason being is I don't think you have the dynasties like you did back then, the teams, you know. I just think it's, you know, it's more now with the what's written on the back of the uniform, more so that's what's written on the front. Like I said, I'm not a big analytic guy because analytics doesn't show you everything about what goes on with individuals, but how has the game changed to you other than now we got the interleague going big and everything like that? I don't understand the guy at second base in extra innings, you know, softball thing, if you're asking me. During the pandemic, we had the seven-inning doubleheaders. The pitching is just totally different. I mean, Bert Blylevin, you know, threw 200 innings, and, you know, every year seems like, and now we got guys throwing 50 pitches, and then we're turning it over to the bullpen. So, in a nutshell, what do you see baseball happening these days?
Well, it's a completely different style, and, you know, I think a lot of it's driven, you know, through, you know, the financial compensations, you know, where home runs mean a lot more than moving runners over. Strikeouts aren't, you know, looked at as a negative. The whole thing with the man on second base, you know, my daughters played travel softball, and that's how you did, you know, you – went extra innings, you know, they called it a Texas tiebreaker. To have MLB start using amateur girls softball rules, it's pretty idiotic. You know, the whole thing that's going on right now, and you know, one thing I have to say is, you know, there was a work stoppage in 1994. Rob Manfred was a token lawyer for the owners back then. There's no it's not a coincidence that there was a work stoppage this year to start with. You know, you've got the same guy that, you know, kind of, I don't know if he's running things or if he's a puppet or whatever, but
right,
these new Manfred rules of not taking a guy out at second, no contact at home plate. I mean, there's so many different things that it's actually laughable. It's not professional baseball, in my opinion, and
yeah,
there's a lot of younger folks that enjoy this brand of baseball, and, you know, thank God for them, because if it was a bunch of old farts like me, nobody would ever watch.
And not only that, we can go back to Bowie Kuhn running it. I liked him. I mean, Peter Ueberroth. It just seemed like when Seeley came in here, and then now Manfred, it just, you know, they're not in the trenches, and you got to get into the trenches and understand where teams and players and everything's coming from. you know, money comes and goes, relationships are priceless. And when I look at these two guys, I just don't think they care about building relationships. It's a tongue-in-cheek mentality. I mean, that's just my opinion on it, you know. And when you look at it from afar and you see what's going on, the sports definitely changed. I mean, you know, back then we had guys hustling. We had guys really, you know, doing a lot, Pete Rose, and even in your day and age, and the hitters back then. And I just think today it's, you know, the pitching is just totally different from the Glavin and Maddoxes and all those kind of guys that you played with. So, you know, this is where it's going. I don't know where it's going. I do like one thing in baseball, and, you know, I like the interleague, and now they're going to start to get this thing where, you know, the Yankees can come into San Diego and stuff on a daily basis pretty much, you know, so people get accustomed to these guys. But as far as, you know, the teams and everything, I mean, it'd be hard-pressed to compare to these teams of today to the Braves and your Pirates and the Cardinals and some of these other squads. Any final thought to that?
Well, I love the interleague play thing. I wish, you know, we had it back in the day, and it does give the fans a chance to see, you know, the stars from, you know, a different league. Of course, you know, Los Angeles, you got the Angels, you know, you've got the Dodgers. You can see both, but, you know, a lot of places, you know, I grew up in New England, so I was able to see whoever came to Boston. So the National League, unless they were on Game of the Week, you know, you just never saw anybody. So I think that gives the fans, you know, a chance to see, you know, all the greatest players. And that's a fabulous thing. You know, if there's one good thing that Pittsburgh or that baseball has done is I agree with you completely. Interleague play, absolutely genius.
Yeah. Almost 900 games, 12 seasons. I'll tell you, I always say this, when I get up to heaven and God decides to send me back down, I want to be a Major League Baseball player or a sports agent. And I will tell you this, I think the world of this interview with you, I know we'll do it again, and quite impressive. Let everybody know what you're doing today. What, you know, relaxing in Florida, you know, and stuff like that. What's on your agenda these days? Helping give baseball a little something to the kids out there.
Well, I've actually retired from all baseball. Things became very difficult for me dealing with parents, and you know, you right. had a lot of you know, parents out there that, you know, just an unrealistic, you know, idea. You know, talking about how their kids being recruited to go to Duke at 8 years old. You know, it's silliness like that that folks just don't realize. They want to complain about playing time. The kid doesn't show up for practice. You know, there's a lot of things that folks don't understand. And, they, you know, it became really a chore to deal with the parents. As far as the kids go, you know, I miss working with the kids. But, you know, they, again, are being talked to, you know, by, the you know, their parents. And they, you know, would show up for practice. Hey, coach, I should be playing. My dad said so. You know, so that kind of made it tough.
Yeah, and when you look at it these days, two things that we've lost pretty much in this country, just a matter of opinion, is accountability and communication. Some of these parents, you know, they hit a home run in the rec league and, you know, they want to be the next, you know, Barry Bonds or Mike Schmidt or who knows what. But, yeah, they live through their kids. And, yeah, it's unbelievable what's going on these days. Hopefully it can rectify itself. But as we wind this thing down, my good friend, let everybody know again how they can get a hold of you if they want to, which I think they will.
Well, I've got a Facebook page that I don't post a lot, but I go see it every day. I am Mike LaValliere on Facebook and on Twitter. I can be reached at Spanky Catches.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. You enjoy the weekend. I'll enjoy this interview. We'll touch bases next week or so. Have a blessed one, and thank you very, very much for everything you do for me, my friend.
Mark, it's absolutely my pleasure, and big shout-out to the Pittsburgh folks. Love the bird.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. The Roberto Clemente Bridge now going in there and everything. Pirates, I'm on a high right now because the Pirates just swept the Dodgers. So the little train that could, David Slade Goliath, so I'm having fun out here in Los Angeles. Don't see too many Dodger caps as I'm walking around with my Pirate hat on. So that'll be a story for another day. For Mike LaValle out there in Florida, yours truly, Mark Mancini in Los Angeles. Thanks for tuning in. Catch this on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to. Till then, have a blessed weekend, guys. Thank you very much for listening.